This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Tensions are running high Sunday in southeastern Nigeria as a former separatist region commemorates when more than a million people died in war and famine in the late 1960s. The indigenous people of Biafra, the leading separatist group, is remembering war victims over 2 days with a candlelit march Sunday evening and a strict order for people to remain indoors on Monday for their own safety. Some streets were already totally empty Sunday as residents stayed indoors a day after the killing of 2 Air Force personnel by unidentified gunmen. And local police said 6 gunmen shot dead an influential politician Sunday who was a former advisor to Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. Violence has flared in southeast Nigeria this year, leaving dead at least 127 police or members of the security services. Thousands marched in Colombia's capital, Bogota, Sunday, waving flags and dressed in white to demand an end to protests and roadblocks, as well as express support for security forces following a month of demonstrations. Talks between the government and national protest leaders are to restart on Sunday after stalling last week. Widespread protests began at the end of April in opposition to a now-withdrawn tax reform, but have since expanded to call for basic income, opportunities for young people, and to end police violence. The national government has so far linked 17 civilian deaths and the deaths of 2 police officers to the protests, while rights groups say security forces have killed dozens of civilians. In Colombia's third-largest city, Cali, 13 people were killed during a day of protests on Friday. The UN has called for an investigation. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden pledged Sunday to tell Russian leader Vladimir Putin at their June summit that Washington will not let Moscow abuse human rights. The upcoming face-to-face meeting with the Kremlin leader comes amid levels of tension not seen for years, with Washington recently dialing back ambitions to little more than establishing a relationship in which both sides understand each other and can work together in specific areas. Since taking office, Biden has imposed new sanctions against Moscow over cyber hacking, repeated meddling in presidential elections, treatment of jailed Putin critic Alexei Navalny, and the military conflict in Ukraine. Yet another focus is on Russian-dominated Belarus, which caused an uproar last week after authorities forced an airline passing overhead to land, then arrested an opponent to President Alexander Lukashenko who had been aboard. Egypt and Israel held high-level talks in both countries Sunday to shore up a fragile truce between Israel and the Hamas militant group and rebuild the Gaza Strip after a punishing 11-day war that left parts of the Palestinian enclave in ruins. Egypt's foreign minister received his Israeli counterpart in Cairo on Sunday as part of Egypt's efforts to revive the Mideast peace process and to, quote, build on the ceasefire in Gaza, according to the ministry. The Israeli embassy in Cairo claims it's the first public visit by an Israeli foreign minister to Egypt since 2008. As part of the ceasefire efforts, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hosted Egypt's intelligence chief in Jerusalem. An Egyptian official said the intelligence chief would also meet with Palestinian officials in the West Bank before heading to Gaza for talks with Hamas leaders. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi said Sunday during his monthly radio talk show, his country is fighting the coronavirus pandemic with all its strength. India on Sunday reported its lowest daily rise in new coronavirus infections in 46 days at just more than 165,000 cases, while deaths rose by 3,400. The South Asian nation's tally of infection now stands at nearly 28 million, with the death toll at 325,000, according to the health ministry. Modi also praised the country's ability to fight natural disasters amid the pandemic. 2 cyclones have hit the country this month, including the most powerful to hit its west coast in more than 2 decades, killing more than 150 people. And another cyclone swept into eastern India from the Bay of Bengal on Wednesday, flooding hundreds of low-lying villages and making more than 50,000 people homeless. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
You can notice by the fact what they are saying that it will be welcomed for these people, will be something good to bring the Junta to good chances, to good mood, something like that.
West African heads of state meet in Ghana Sunday about the political situation in Mali.
The only thing we do as oppositions is to consistently highlight the unprecedented level of corruption. The government has refused to take actions. There is no political will. They have not prosecuted anyone for corruption, especially within the cycles of the ruling party.
The Liberian government comes under criticism for spending $71,000 to transport 3 cartons of herbal medication from Madagascar.
The Namibian people should be patient to get the official information through the institution that they have established themselves, through the institution that has initiated the whole process, and that is going to be done during that time.
And Namibian Prime Minister planned to address Parliament this week about an agreement with Germany over genocide against the Nama and the Herero people. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Leaders from the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, plan to meet in the Ghanaian capital Accra Sunday. Organizers say the meeting will focus, among others, on the latest political development in Mali, a member state of the group. The meeting follows a decision by the Malian Constitutional Court naming former military junta leader Colonel Assimi Goïta as president of the transitional government. He is expected to lead the transitional government until elections are held to restore constitutional rule. Critics say the court's decision could undermine that effort. They are calling on regional leaders to consider measures including targeted sanctions to ensure Mali's transitional government keeps to the timetable for democratic elections. For more on the expectations of the ECOWAS meeting and the latest political development, I reach Salif Tigana, CEO of Tigana Technology in the Malian capital, Bamako.
Well, a vast majority of Malian expects that ECOWAS will ease sanctions if there is sanctions on Sunday. We can say that because we have seen a lot of movements that are joining the junta's position right now. For instance, we have seen Mali National Worker Union, who were planning to protest. They suspended the protest, and they even call on their members to return to work on May 26th until the situation comes to the normal. We also have seen the M5 protest movement, who were opposed to transitional government and were calling on the dissolution of the National Transitional Council, said that they have agreed and accept to pick a prime minister among them, as the junta have asked them to do. So all this movement shows that the Mali want to go on compromise. They want to do something, and it shows that they are expecting the ECOWAS to put maybe with a sanction, that sanction can be easy.
So they are calling for sanctions to be eased when the African leaders meet in Ghana to discuss the latest development in Mali. Is that the case?
Exactly, but not all Malians. As we have seen some groups that are very, very, very unhappy of what's happening because they think it is unlawful, it is unconstitutional, and some are even saying that they are ready to take the junta into court in Mali because what they have done are not good. So, yeah, those groups may be hoping that the ECOWAS will put sanctions on the junta, bring things to normal. It means to let a civilian president lead the transition instead of the junta leader becoming the president of the transition.
But Salif, the Constitutional Court in Mali
has named the leader of the military junta, Colonel Assimi Goïta, as the transitional president. This after he also released the former transitional president and prime minister. How are people reacting to this latest development?
Yeah, this is one of the major reasons why some people are very upset of what's going on right now, because they are like what is happening now were like what happened when Ibeka was in power. When Ibeka was in power, the constitutional court were doing whatever he wanted, not respecting the rules, not respecting the constitution. That's what some of the people are thinking now. And we can see that on social networks, we can see that on TV radio stations, that people are saying this is something that is very unconstitutional and they are not even there. There are even some people who are planning to take the junta into the court because they think this is unconstitutional and they're not agree with it.
What do they want to see to move the transitional process forward so Mali will return to constitutional rule?
Yeah, I think that's what they're hoping. They are hoping that the ECOWAS sanctions may help to bring the junta to the census, and that may help them to choose the civil president instead of military president. And some are even thinking that Mbandao, the former president, should come back and continue to lead the transition. These are the variety of positions that people are having now.
So which specific groups are calling for ECOWAS to impose sanctions? Are these the opposition political parties or civil society groups?
I haven't seen a political party calling for sanctions or associations calling for sanctions. But you can notice by the interventions or by what they are saying that ECOWAS sanction will be welcomed for these people, will be something good to bring the junta to their to good chances, to good mood, something like that.
Salif Tigana is the CEO of Tigana Technology. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. In Liberia, the government is coming under criticism for spending $71,000 to transport 3 donated cartons of herbal medication from Madagascar to combat the coronavirus. Opposition groups say it appears officials misled the public when it said the medication was provided at no cost, only to reverse the statement months later. They are questioning why the government used taxpayers' money to import a drug that had not received approval from the World Health Organization and which they say does not appear to cure the disease. They are demanding answers, saying recent explanations are not acceptable. Mohamed Ali, Secretary General of the Liberian Opposition Unity Party, tells me the government's action and statement are disappointing.
There are certain concerns from all quarters of Liberia. We were made to understand during the height of this COVID-19 crisis that Madagascar was providing a cartoon of their Madagascar herbs to Liberia for free. Only recently, when the General Auditing Commission conducted an audit into that, we were made to understand that up to $71,000 was paid by the government of Liberia just for a cartoon of that medication. And the thing about it is that it wasn't deposited at any health center. The president himself collected the medication at the airport and it disappeared from there. Nobody knows what happened to it. So, but the lie about it is what is getting Liberians angry, that it was free, but then we have the government now saying they pay $71,500 for a cartoon of the Madagascar herbs.
But Mohamed, what do you say to supporters of the government who are of the view that although the medication was free, the transportation to bring it from Madagascar to Liberia, somebody has to foot the bill, and that is what
the government did in good faith to try to help boost the immune system to fight against the disease in Liberia. How do you respond to that?
Well, the only thing we do as oppositions is to consistently highlight the unprecedented level of corruption. The government has refused to take actions. There is no political will. They have not prosecuted anyone for corruption, especially within the cycles of the ruling party. And, you know, we cannot go beyond highlighting, we cannot go beyond making the loudest advocacies to ensure that this government becomes accountable to the people.
Some are calling for a thorough investigation into this. Others are saying it's just a common publicity stunt by the opposition just to make the president and by extension his government unpopular. What say you?
Well, you see, the opposition does not control the General Auditing Commission of Liberia. The opposition was not the one that conducted an audit into this amount. It was the General Auditing Commission. The General Auditing Commission reported, and this is how this $71,500 for a cartoon of the Madagascar hare was uncovered. So how can it be the opposition trying to tarnish the reputation of the government? That's not true. It is only been said now on the radio. It has been discussed by cross-section of Liberians. And not only opposition, every Liberian is concerned that every small money that is misappropriated or misapplied or stolen from this country can help poor kids go to school. It can help improve the living conditions of Liberians. It can help improve schools for kids. So these are some of the reasons why Liberians get very jittery. They get very concerned when they hear any small amount missing or misapplied or misappropriated from government.
Mohammed, so what are you going to do as opposition in Liberia, particularly when a lot of Liberians are saying somebody has to be held accountable for this loss of money to the state?
Well, the only thing we do as oppositions is to consistently highlight the unprecedented level of corruption. The government has refused to take actions. There is no political will. They have not prosecuted anyone for corruption, especially within the cycles of the ruling party. And, you know, we cannot go beyond highlighting, we cannot go beyond making the loudest advocacies to ensure that this government becomes accountable to the people.
Mohammed Ali is the Secretary General for the Liberian Opposition Unity Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Monrovia. Namibia Prime Minister Sarah Kugongelwa is scheduled to address Parliament this week about an agreement with Germany over genocide committed against the Nama and the Herero people over 100 years ago. The Prime Minister is expected to explain the details of the deal between the two countries. The agreement followed 5 years of negotiations between representatives of the government of Namibia and Germany. This after Berlin officially admitted Friday to committing genocide against the two ethnic groups. Tens of thousands of Herero and about 10,000 Nama were killed, tortured, or driven into the desert for rebelling against colonial rule. Local media reports that under the terms of the agreement, Germany will provide 30 years of financial assistance to improve infrastructure, healthcare, and training programs for the two groups. For more about the much-anticipated disclosure of the accord between Germany and Namibia, I reached Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, the Namibian Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of International Relations and Cooperation.
This whole process has started when the Namibian Parliament passed a motion. And the motion was asking three things, that the German government should accept that they committed genocide, they should apologize, and reparation. That was now given to the government to execute. And that's why for the past 5 years, the government of Namibia, through the envoy and the technical committee, And also the government of Germany had appointed an envoy, and the technical committee they have been engaging. And now they have made progress after 5 years. Now, the Namibian government has channels of communication, and since this is a decision or it's a motion of parliament, the government of Namibia has decided that the official announcement has to be made in the Namibian parliament, where the public will be officially informed. And that is going to be done by the prime minister, who is the head of the government business in parliament. Our parliament has been on recess, but it is resuming this coming week. And it will be at that time that the whole outcome of the five-year engagement will be made available to the public. So therefore, at this stage, as a minister of international relations, that's the only information I can give, that some progress has been made, and they will hear when the prime minister will inform the nation in the parliament. And should there be anything based on what the prime minister is going to say, which requires further explanation, as a minister of international relations and cooperation, I'll be able to explain. So that is where we are today.
Is the government so far pleased with the progress of engagement between Windhoek and the government in Berlin about this issue?
Well, what you are asking is really the progress and the way we stand. And that is going to be explained by the prime minister when he's going to inform the nation.
Let me ask you this quickly, because I spoke with the paramount chief of the Herero people, Vikui Rukoro, who is saying that they were locked out of the engagement between the government of Windhoek and Berlin. And so they are not pleased with how things are at the moment. How do you reassure them that you worked, or the government worked, in their interest?
In fact, when the prime minister is going to speak, I say he's going to talk about the whole process and how open the process was. So if you can just wait at that point, everything will be clarified.
What should be the expectations of Namibians to hear this explanation from the government? What should be their expectations?
Anyway, expectations are expectation, and there is no one who can expect whatever, but they are expecting what is coming out, and it will be made available to them. Good enough, as I say, that the parliament will be resuming this coming week.
So what is the government's message to the people of Namibia following this news that we are hearing about an agreement between Germany and Namibia?
No, the message is only that the Namibian people should be patient to get the official information through the institution that they have established themselves, through the institution that has initiated the whole process, and that is going to be done during that time. So that's what they should expect.
Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa is the Namibian Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. She spoke with me from the capital, Windhoek. Zambia, religious and civil society groups are expressing concern about growing political tension in the run-up to the August 12 general election. They warn that if not properly addressed, clashes between supporters of the Governing Patriotic Front, or PF, and the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, could mar the upcoming presidential and parliamentary vote. The presidential contest is expected to be stiff between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. To learn more about the concerns regarding rising strain between political party supporters, I reach Brebna Changala, a leading Zambian civil rights activist.
There is a political tension in the country, and it will disrupt the smooth running of the country and smooth running of the election calendar. The president is managing, is making pronouncements and decrees. Just yesterday, he banned political rallies. And yet, himself has been campaigning for the last 1.5 years under COVID conditions. Now, when it's critical, and the opposition has not been campaigning for the last 1.5 years, and only 2 months to go to the general election, he puts a brake and decides COVID as the reason. And as such, he has created unnecessary tension because people want to campaign and people want to hear alternative message from the opposition, because definitely the conditions are ripe for this government to be retired in the national interest.
Brebner, the concern is that the ban of public rallies is to prevent the spread of coronavirus across the country. And I understand political party groups have accepted this to campaign electronically ahead of the elections. Why are people displeased with this measure that the Electoral Commission put out, and by extension, the president making such similar statements?
The pandemic is real, and we have had it for the last 1.5 years. And the PF and President Edgar Lungu have been campaigning for the last 1.5 years. And they have put a stop to the opposing views, which is the opposition and civil society, to go out. And the meetings that the opposition has been holding indoors, police have been moving in to disrupt them and detaining people in mass. As I talk to you, throughout the country, people are languishing in cells with the charges like holding illegal meetings under the Public Order Act.
Brebner, what do you say to supporters of the Patriotic Front, the ruling party, accusing civil society groups and opposition groups of joining forces to create tension and instability in the country just to make the president and by extension his government unpopular ahead of the elections?
Those accusations are bound to come. This election is PF versus the people. And you mark my word, it is not PF versus UPND or PF versus Socialist Party or PF versus MDC. It's PF versus the people. There is breakdown of the rule of law. And every citizen in this country is in a hurry to put PF behind our backs and see the future together as a united country.
But Brebner, some political analysts I spoke with are of the view that the political standing as who will win the elections is at 50-50, and that at the close to August elections, before some Zambians will decide who to vote for, and that prediction that the president will win or the opposition leader will win at this time is too premature. How do you respond to that?
Political analysts are allowed. In the Western world, you have got what you call polls, which predict who is going to win, Joe Biden or Trump. In Africa, that science is not yet much appreciated or indeed in play. But I can tell you one thing. This election cannot be 50-50. I doubt it. This is an election where the majority will rule. And the majority are those who have been deprived of reasonable income, those who have been deprived of employment. The majority are those who are on the streets doing nothing but getting crumbs from the PF leadership when it throws money around in order to entice favoritism from the voter. I will tell you, if it was in a civilized society where there was political orderliness and civic responsibility, we should not be discussing this issue.
Brebner Changala is a leading Zambian civil rights activist. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Mpuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, Zimbabwe has been dealing with the shortage of COVID-19 vaccine for over a week now. The government promised to inoculate at least 60% of the country's estimated 14 million by year's end to achieve herd immunity. For VOA, Colombo's Mavunga reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
This vaccination is free for every Zimbabwean.
That is a radio advertisement urging Zimbabweans to get vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. But a visit to Wilkins Hospital, the country's main vaccination center, shows that people are being turned away. One of them is a 28-year-old man who chose to be identified by his middle name, Farai.
I had a struggle on Monday when I wanted to get my second dose of the Sinovac COVID-19 vaccine. So when I wanted to take the second one, I couldn't access it because there were a lot of people at Wilkins. So I thought of going to a polyclinic. They said they had ran out of vaccines. From there, I went to Parinya to a group of hospitals. I was also told that they ran out of vaccines. I also saw a lot of people who were turned away, especially those who wanted to get their first doses.
Another one turned away is a 26-year-old woman who preferred to be identified as Mariam.
I went to Parinya to hospital on Monday in Harare Hospital, and I was told they don't have vaccinations for first doses. I intended to have my first dose on that day. They also said they were not sure when they would have the vaccines.
Since February, Zimbabwe has received batches of COVID-19 vaccine from China, Russia, and India. Zimbabwean officials refused to comment on the shortages. Zimbabwe Information Minister Monica Mchangwa this week said the government was still on course to achieve the required herd immunity in order to control the spread of the global pandemic.
Regarding vaccine procurement, the public is informed that delivery of the 500,000 Sinopharm vaccine doses, which were ordered from China, is expected to arrive in the country this June 2021.
Zimbabwe is not alone in dealing with the vaccine shortages. This week, Dr. Machidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization's regional director for Africa, said there was a need for a rapid rollout of vaccine on the continent to contain a potential third wave of COVID-19.
At a minimum, Africa needs at least 20 million AstraZeneca vaccines by mid-July to deliver second doses to everyone who received their first shots. Africa needs vaccines now. Any pause in our vaccination campaigns will lead to lost lives and lost hope. Another 200 million doses are needed so that the continent can vaccinate 10% of its population by September this year.
Zimbabwe has 38,854 confirmed coronavirus infections and 1,592 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the global outbreak. As of Friday, just under 650,000 Zimbabweans had received their first dose of vaccine, and about 305,000 had received their second shots. Columbus Mafungam for VOA News, Harare.
World Menstrual Health Day on May 28 was observed in Cameroon, with NGOs and girls asking the government to either subsidize sanitary pads or provide them for free, as they already do with condoms. For VOA, Moki Edward Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
At least 300 school children are gathered at the government school in the southwestern town of Boya on the occasion of this year's World Menstrual Health Day. 15-year-old Karin Zelen tells them in Lamso, a language spoken in Cameroon, that young girls and women continue to suffer from stigma during their menstrual periods, and it's considered taboo to even discuss it.
I do period today and more with people and gang who should keep.
She says it is unethical for students and teachers to mock girls who are seen with drops of blood on their skirts. She says menstruation is a normal vaginal bleeding that occurs as part of a woman's monthly cycle, indicating that her growth is normal. She says people should comfort and assist girls who menstruate by donating sanitary kits or clean pieces of cloth that can be used to absorb menstrual discharge. Nzelen said the education of many young girls is undermined by limited access to hygienic menstrual products and poor sanitation infrastructure. Ernestine Urban is founder and coordinator of the NGO Able Women Cameroon that works for the emancipation of women and girls. She says the NGOs invited Nzelen because of the ordeal she endured while experiencing her first menses in the countryside.
She didn't even notice that her period had started until blood stains were dripping on her leg, and her mother had to start tearing her dress that she was putting on. Every now and then, she would tear off the piece and give her to use. And in the morning again, they would try to get to an area where there is water. She would just try to clean herself, and the mother would tear off another piece until they got here. Her first experience was in the bush, and her mother had to sacrifice the dress that she was wearing.
Cameroon's Ministry of Social Affairs reports that many girls do not understand what is happening when they start menstruating. They either go into hiding or start using traditional concoctions proposed by their peers to stop the flow. Mothers often do not discuss menstruation with their daughters. The absence of adequate sanitation facilities in schools and public spaces makes it very difficult for women and girls to manage their periods. Feka Pashibel is coordinator of the NGO Hope for the Vulnerables and Orphans. She says the government should assist young girls with menstrual kits every month. Her NGO distributed menstrual pads to poor children at school.
There are many more women and girls who need sanitary kits than the quantity we actually brought, and it's frustrating. We see women who use rags, papers, who use just anything unhealthy to stop that blood flow at that particular moment. It has made the women and girls to lose their dignity. Our wish is for government to subsidize the cost of these sanitary pads. Why not make them free? If they can give condoms for free, why can't they give sanitary pads too for free, at least to young girls?
The government did not say if it will provide the kits free, but Stella Dobgima of Cameroon's Youth and Family Empowerment Center says there is ongoing education against taboos. She says communities should stop thinking that menstruation is an impurity or a disease. She says communities should stop subjecting women and girls to religious, domestic, or sexual prohibitions, which often lead to further isolation or stigmatization. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's kick off with football. Egyptian giants Al Ahly are this year's African Super Cup champions. Al Ahly won the trophy on Friday as they beat Renaissance Bekane of Morocco 2-0 to win the African Super Cup. It was a record extending 7 Super Cup success for Ahly. And now, with 9 titles in the African Champions League, Ahly are the continent's most successful team. This time, they were competing as Champions League winners, while Bekane won last season's Confederation Cup, their first major title. Meanwhile, DR Congo will appeal over Guelda Kanga's Gabon eligibility ruling. According to media reports, the DR Congo Football Federation will appeal over Confederation of African Football CAF ruling that Kanga is eligible to play for Gabon. On Wednesday, CAF dismissed DR Congo's claim of identity fraud by Kanga, saying the proof offered by DR Congo was not convincing nor sufficient to establish identity fraud. Now DR Congo Football Federation intends to launch an appeal with CAF's appeal panel. Gabon reached next year's Africa Cup of Nations after finishing runners-up in Group D of the qualifiers behind group winners at the Gambia. DR Congo, who finished third, had hoped a ruling against Kanga would see the Panthers lose 10 points and see the Leopards qualify instead. DR Congo Football Federation insists that Kanga, who plays for Serbian club Red Star Belgrade, was born in the Congolese capital Kinshasa in 1985 and allegedly submitted paperwork to back up their claims. In response, the Gabon Football Federation provided documents to prove that Kanga is eligible to play for Gabon, including a birth certificate for Kanga. DR Congo have only 3 days from the CAF ruling to appeal. In athletics, Nigeria has agreed to step in to host the African Athletics Championships in Lagos. Algeria had been due to host the event but had asked for a postponement due to the ongoing global COVID-19 pandemic. The event will now be held between 23rd and 27th June, which gives athletes the chance to achieve qualifying standards for the Tokyo Olympics ahead of the June 29th deadline. Nigeria Youth and Sports Development Minister Sunday Dare and the President of Confederation of African Athletics, Kalkab Malbon, met in Cairo last week to discuss moving the championships to the Teslim Balogun Stadium in Lagos. The event had been delayed 3 times before Nigeria agreed to host the championships, which should have taken place in 2020, before being postponed by a year due to COVID-19. Meanwhile, in South Africa, Caster Semenya, who was denied an opportunity to win a third consecutive Olympic 800 meters gold, will now attempt to qualify for the Tokyo Games over 5,000 meters. She will run in a meeting in Durban, where she must improve her personal best over the distance to be able to go to the Olympics in 2 months' time. The 30-year-old South African is banned from competing in any race from 400 meters to a mile after World Athletics ruled in 2018 that in order to ensure fair competition, women with high natural testosterone levels must take drugs to reduce them to compete in middle races. Semenya, who refuses to take medication to alter her testosterone levels, has challenged the ruling but seen several appeals dismissed. The 5,000 meters is therefore her best chance to go to the Tokyo Games. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. It should be appreciated that the political class in Somalia has now reached an agreement to proceed with new elections for the election of a new president of the country. It may be recalled that after the current president had passed his time in February, he had moved on to make arrangements to continue in office by an unconstitutional manner. The opposition was so strong that he had to abandon his efforts, and we are now in a limbo. It was reported that the Prime Minister of Somalia has reached a consensus to hold the election within 60 days. Not much details have been announced as to the nature of the consensus, but from press reports, it would appear that they would return to the indirect method for the selection of a new president. This is very regrettable, because when the efforts started to build a foundation for democracy in Somalia, it was understandable that given the turmoil of this time and the instability, that an indirect method was essential. But this has been decades and decades ago, and there are no good reasons why Somalia should still be using the indirect method of the clan method. You cannot build a democracy in any country when it is the clan leaders who are able to decide who the president of a country should be. The people must have a stake on who is the president, and this can only be attained if they themselves are able to participate in the election. This is one reason why many commentators have said that the time has come for the franchise in Somalia to be expanded and to let the people participate fully in the election. Of course, there will be those who will say that with the presence of Al-Shabaab and other rebel groups in and around Somalia, that it would be unrealistic to expect the people of Somalia to proceed to the polls to elect their leaders. But there is no alternative to that. That is why it should be a plan worked out not only by the African Union, but in close cooperation with the Security Council and the Secretary General, that clear understanding be made now that this will be the last election which will be by the indirect method. And whoever emerges as the new president should make a full commitment to start very early to build the necessary foundation for free and fair election in Somalia to elect the next representatives of the government. There should be no alternative to that. And some will say, well, it is not realistic, but look at what's happening in Somalia. Forget about the Al-Shabaab threats. Somalia itself is faced with peacekeepers' fatigue. Those providing troops for Somalia are beginning to ask themselves, how long more should we stay? Somalia itself is beginning to have problems with some of its neighbors, for example, like with Kenya. So it is in the interest of all that we start now to build a firm and sure democratic base in Somalia. It has gone for too long when the people of Somalia had a say as who should be the government. And this, I believe, is what the Security Council and the African Union should insist on as they embrace this new consensus about an election of the new president of Somalia. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls, the best thing in the world.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
The best thing in the world.
I never trade you for anybody else singing.
She says she really grew up poor like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dreamed forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She wanna make a pretty but your heart is a mess. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5 mind and I grind. Yeah, yeah. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. Your back against the world, I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing in all the world, I never tried you for anybody else.
Like a trophy when Naomi's walking. She need an Oscar for that pretty dark skin. Pretty like Lupita when the camera's closing. Drip broke the levy when my Kelly's rolling. I think tonight she might break her brain. Melanin too dark to throw her shade. She minds her business and winds her ways. Roll like 24K.
Okay. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fighting but falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. Your back against the world, I never tried you for anybody else. A brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. The best thing about the world,
oh, have you looked in the mirror lately? Wish you could trade eyes with me.
Because
there's complexities in complexion, but your skin is glow like diamonds.
Dig me like the earth, you be giving birth to everything alive, baby, know your worth.
I love everything about you, from your nappy curls to every single curve, your body natural.
Same skin that was broken, be the same skin taking over. Most things are the focus. When you're in the room, they notice you.
Notice you.
Cause you're beautiful. Ooh. Yeah, you're beautiful. Ooh. Them and them gon' fall in love with you and all of your glory. Your skin is not only dark, it shines and it tells your story. Keep dancing, they can't control.
These are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back at home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. Oh sorry I no pa, but I'm bobo dumb boy. It drew where we are. And the guns don't go. Now it beats me every night and day. My Michelle used to want me, but I didn't want to know. My Michelle, my Michelle, my Michelle, my Michelle. Now picking up the here, mama. Picking up the here, papa. And then quada yaba. Social media nada. But then I have a brapa. Better na ye nyo dopa. Nesu wa kodana wudie uhu koteni ya usi ya bo. He told me he was a banker, no knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bankum boxer. I'm sorry I no pa, but I'm bobo dambo. E drue we are, shaka ni ganja mpo. Now he de beat me, every night and day. Mami show, mami show, mami show, mami show.
One day you will know. These are the words of my mother. As I'm getting old, even now I remember. So I'm packing all my tools, I'm going back home. A young girl like me shouldn't be caught with an old school fool. He told me he was a banker, not knowing bank robber. This man is a gangster, bukum bangum boxer. Now he beats me every night and day. Mami Shay used to want me, but I didn't wanna know. Mami Shay, Mami Shay, Mami Shay, Mami Shay, Mami Shay, Mami Shay.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Bill Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, an elephant does not die of one broken rib. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.